This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
This is a special message for our video viewers on YouTube. This week's show will be audio only, except for this announcement. Linda Moulton Howe's video system would not work, so we had to just do an audio show, but it's still well worth your time to listen to. Linda and I have been friends for a long time, and we know each other's minds very well, and it is an extremely powerful, in my opinion, exploration of some of the big questions, like, is there a conflict over mankind or not? Linda thinks so. I'm more questioning, but there is evidence that there might be. And could that be at the core of all of the secrecy and fumbling and confusion that's been going on for 70 years? And how likely is it that that's finally going to resolve itself in 2022? Well, Linda's got some fascinating ideas, so listen up and enjoy the show.
Support UnknownCountry.com and its great mission to make contact happen. Use our vast archive of interviews, meditations, commentaries, news, and Whitley Strieber audiobooks to expand your mind and your understanding of close encounter. Meet others who have similar interests on our active free message board or in our subscriber comments and Wednesday night chats. There is no other site like Unknown Country in or out of this world. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today.
How curious are you? How much do you really want to know about the world you live in? There are, for example, very real conspiracies. We're talking about one of them today. And this is a place where if it's real, we're going to talk about it, but not if it's not real. So there's no confusion here. If we're talking conspiracy on Dreamland and on unknowncountry.com, it's because we can prove it, just like we can prove that the Roswell incident has been covered up. We can prove these things. We can prove that the abduction phenomena is in some way very real. We can prove that there are unusual materials in this world because some of them are right here in my possession. So, this is an unusual place. It's a unique place. And above all, it is a great place to explore. Exploring the unknowncountry.com archive is a really extraordinary experience. It's a place where you can regain what we are losing, which is a lost sense of wonder and a willingness and to explore the unknown. We live in a terribly difficult world right now. This place is an oasis of wonder. Join unknowncountry.com today.
Linda Moulton Howe and I have been working together literally since the beginning, at least of my experience, and Linda was at this before that. One of the first people to come up to my cabin who was involved in UFO research was Linda Moulton Howe. We have been friends. We have worked together on Coast to Coast AM for years. Linda Moulton Howe was a weekly regular on Dreamland. And her weekly YouTube broadcast on the Earth Files channel are enormous and deservedly so. And Linda, how many subscribers do you have on your channel now?
We have broken through 191,000.
That is deserved, every bit of it. And the reason is very simple. Every week, Linda Moulton Howe delivers one of the absolutely most fascinating shows you can listen to on or off the internet, and it's fun. How much residuals royalties do your cats get?
They get all the love in the world, and they seem now to actually like coming in when the lights come on. So well, I think that they are with me as well.
Well, that's great, because I know they were a little iffy about it at first.
Yeah.
But cats being cats, they've gotten used to it, and now they look forward to it because they enjoy it so much, and that's very obvious. Your contribution to the Observer's documentary is powerful, very powerful. They all are, but I think there's a very special Linda Moulton Howe aspect to your particular contribution. So folks, do not miss this. Do not miss the Observers. You'll learn a lot when you're listening to Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, I want to ask you basically the same two questions I've asked everybody else, which are, what are your hopes for 2022 and what are your fears? Well, let's start out with what you find hopeful about the unfolding mystery which we are involved in.
I think that the timeline changed over the last 12 months to one way or the other, no matter what people do on planet Earth, that there is an inertia that is going forward now that is bigger than the planetary civilization that we're in the sense that we are now going to move one way or another inexorably to we're not alone in this universe. And if the government of the United States would talk truthfully, would tell honestly that it has had knowledge about extraterrestrial biological entities since World War II, when the big secret began, when everything started moving into the black world away, and that one of the ironies is that we are supposed to be a government of, by, and for the people. And I received an email today, just before we connected, and it is from a viewer of my Earth Files, and says, I am not an American citizen, but it bothers me that the American people are paying via their taxes for two space programs. The official face of NASA is using taxpayer money to research and fund space exploration at an elementary level. The Black Space Program, which already has all this information and is actually out in space trading with other civilizations, but who is also funded by the American taxpayer in secret and appears to not be sharing its technology with the official branch of NASA. How can this be justified to the American people? And that has been one of my questions. It has been one of my subjects that I have repeated over the last 4 years doing the Earth Files YouTube channel. And in that context, no matter what the government would like to block, no matter how much the United States Department of Defense and all of the intel agencies would like to block the truth of history, both ancient and current, about the fact that this planet had some kind of extraterrestrial biological entities on it, based on it, experimenting with genetics on this planet at least 270 million years ago. And it is as if our government took a policy decision that they were going to try to keep the true history forever away from the Earth while they went out into space. And that is one of the most important headlines and part of the answer to your question. I have had two sources. I know who they are. I know where they work. They are active. I believe these people. Both have told me our space force that has been presented to us in the last couple of years as something forming, trying to evolve, what kind of space uniforms are they going to have, all of that was nonsense from their point of view, because I have been told by these two sources that work for, let's say, Intel and the Pentagon today. We have Space Force present at 22 different solar systems right now in the Milky Way galaxy and expanding, and that there are already power broker interests that have divided up the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter in our own solar system, dividing them up for one of the most common reasons that any of the non-humans are out in the, whether it's the Milky Way or whether it's Andromeda or one of 3 trillion galaxies in this universe. Everyone needs metals. They need them for different things, and we need gold, we need molybdenum, we need niobium, we need rare metals here. And the very fact that all of that is taking place while we are still living on a planet in which the so-called national world leaders and power brokers deny that they're just creeping up on unidentified aerial phenomena as possibly, maybe, it is something related to outer space. I was pleased to hear that Avril Haines, she is the director of national intelligence, this month said that it was not out of the realm of possibility that UFO UAPs were extraterrestrial, and she used that word. And so I think that the stage is being set. They want a lot of control on the truth. They don't want us talking about animal mutilations, which are actions by extraterrestrial biological entities. They don't want a lot of discussion about abductees and about clones or hybrids. And yet that is part of the interaction between extraterrestrial civilizations in this planet. What they do want is to have the excitement that we are starting to move toward putting a base on the moon, that we are going to have a launch through Elon Musk to Mars in 2024. And as long as news stays with what they're fed on those headlines and everybody else backs away from the other big truths of animal mutilations and human abductions, and that the entire ancient genetic history of standing up primates on this planet are because of genetic manipulation by advanced civilizations, that's where the government feels that they can hold the reins. I do not think that it will be possible to hold the reins on the truth. And that's the part that I mean. I feel like something has shifted and changed. And that one way or the other, the whole relationship of evolving life on this planet in relationship to advanced extraterrestrial biological beings is going to be evolving, perhaps dominating the news as we get deeper into this century.
Well, I would agree with you there. Now, a lot of people would say two things. They would say that what you described of being there, essentially being the Richard Dolan breakaway civilization being real, is just too far-fetched to believe. And also the idea that there are warring entities, that there are reptilians, Nordics, and Greys essentially in a tussle over us. That these are just beyond belief. But are they really? I don't want you to go into proofs of them now, because that's not what this is about. But what I want to say, folks, is we need to take an open mind when we hear these things, because they are possible. Well, for example, Gary McKinnon, early in the year 2000, hacked into NASA's website, NASA's computer system. He didn't hack into it, which is why he wasn't extradited to the United States. It was open and didn't have any passwords. And among the things he found when I interviewed him, unfortunately before Unknown Country started, and therefore I don't have the interview on the website, was that there were space forces out there that it sounded like some kind of a video game. Do you remember that, Linda?
Oh, absolutely. And I interviewed him. It's at earthfiles.com, my news website, going back into somewhere around 2004, 5, 6, somewhere in there. And I think that Gary McKinney is one of the voices early on, because of how he stumbled from the UK into an open computer that was tied into either an intel agency or the Department of Defense. And it was the fact that he was seeing, like, spreadsheets, and the spreadsheets had the names that related to what sounded like extraterrestrial space missions.
Yes.
With pilots. And that is so consistent with the current information that I have, that by 1972, we already had Space Force going out with the Tall Nordics and the Tall Whites into other solar systems in the Milky Way galaxy. One man that I have talked to recently said he understands that there have been at least 12 missions with Earthbound Space Force out to the Andromeda Galaxy. And I was just going to put a context for this, that the strongest source for all of this that I have ever talked to in my career was in December of 1999, when two men took a month to set up a meeting in which all three of us had to travel. One worked for the World Bank. He was a colleague of another man who worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency for 23 years and was retiring. And when they got a hold of me, it was, would I be willing to travel? And I did, and they did. And it was a seven-hour meeting. And in that 7 hours, he began by explaining to me that in his 23 years of working for the Defense Intelligence Agency, his job was to monitor and analyze the conflict of three competing extraterrestrial biological civilizations on this planet. He said, "Our government has proof, Linda, that these three have been competing on this planet for at least 270 million years. And when I said, "What is the proof?" he said, "If I told you, both you and I would be in danger, and so I'm not going to tell you what that is." When you take his description of his own job, monitoring and analyzing the competition of three competing extraterrestrial civilizations, how did he break them down? He said, the three start with the reptilians, the reptilian humanoids. He said they always claim that Earth is theirs because they have been here first. The other two are the, he called them the Nordics, the tall, blonde, usually blue-eyed, very white-skinned, in leotard kind of uniforms, and that they have had manipulation in gene experiments on this planet as well, but unlike the reptilians that like to dominate and live underground in the what we would call Mesopotamia deserts or the Middle East in the modern day, that the tall Nordics seek to go down below the basins of the oceans and the seas of the world where there are huge caverns and they have bases. And I've always thought that Earth is like a hotel. We're on the surface and that there are other intelligences that have various other places on the planet. He said the third group interacting against or with, and it's very complicated, reptilians, Nordics, are the grays, and said they come in many, many, many types of artificial intelligence as well as organic, and that the organic are usually very tall, 7 foot and extremely thin, while the shorter ones are all artificial intelligence working for them, and that those are the three that have been involved with Earth for at least 270 million years in conflict with each other. So if you jump to today, in 2021, soon to be 2022, the idea that we are, for the very first time, being told by the, we'll say, representatives of the public government, not the black world that has been operating since World War II, having to do with all kinds of secrets and knowing that there were non-humans involved with this planet, with Mars, with the moon, Ganymede, and on and on. Our government has known all this for a very long time at the black secret level. Right now, one of the questions that I have, and I'd be very interested in your perspective on this, Whitley, I am convinced that it is absolutely true that there are the tall Nordics with tall whites, that they are a group that has a vested interest in this earth and in the evolution of standing up humanoids like humans. And then the reptilians are an entirely different group, and they and the Nordics have been fighting each other for a very long time. And in between, playing all sides, are the Greys. Do you think that, have you had any sources imply to you that something is very important about the Nordics taking on the reptilians in this century because of something that has been seen in the timelines of the future?
I don't have any information about that. I'm still sort of at the point of wondering how accurate all of this information is, because we, after all, only have some few sources, and they seem reliable enough. I mean, someone from the World Bank might know a great deal, it's true. But at the same time, you know, I haven't been told these things, and I haven't been shown any of these things. There is one other thing, there are two other things, though, that suggest to me that there may be a very extensive amount of hidden activity, that there isn't just a black budget, but an entire black world that we know nothing about. And that is, of course, when Donald Rumsfeld, on the Saturday after 9/11, announced that the Pentagon had lost $1 trillion. That's a lot of money.
Whitley, it was the day before 9/11.
Oh, the day before.
It was the day before, which made it even somehow
creepier,
more profound, because he is saying that they're missing, it was close to $4 trillion or something in the Department of Defense budget. And then the next day comes the horror of 9/11 and the collapse of the other building besides the Trade Tower.
Yeah, and the Building 7 was imploded. It didn't collapse on its own.
Exactly. And what did it have down in its basement? From Jim Mars did this research, and he and I talked about this a great deal. The Central Intelligence Agency had one of its audit offices in the basement building.
Before the black budget days, I used to go down there to get the military budget when I was working, doing research for my book, Black Magic. And I was told, very frankly, I mean, it was not a secret that that was there.
Yeah.
That there were, and in fact, all three buildings had extensive intelligence community operations in them. The Twin Towers had a listening post that was manned by the National Security Agency.
And Jim Mars did Inside Job, one of his great books, in which he interviewed firemen. I think that was the most fascinating part of the book. He interviewed face-to-face firemen, told me about it, and the firemen said they never understood. They're running up those steps in the Trade Tower, and they are hearing and feeling explosions below their feet.
You know, those, I was told by someone who was working on the towers years ago, before they were built, when they were being built. And this was a conversation in an airplane between two passengers who didn't even know each other's names. He was an engineer working on it, and he said he would never go in it because it was mined. And I said, what do you mean mined? And he said, well, you know, they've got all kinds of secret stuff that they're putting in there, and someone can blow the whole thing up with the push of a button.
And yes, I heard that as well. I don't know how we would prove it, but I heard that independently. So did Jim, that it had been wired. And this is, I can contribute this. The man who owned Building 7 that went down in a very bizarre way, I'm trying to remember if his name was Siegelman, it was something like that. I called his office to get a reality check for a Coast to Coast and an Earth Files that I was doing, and it was about that exact question. Was this building built with some kind of explosives in case there was a need to bring the building down? I had a discussion about it with a woman who was a secretary or an assistant in the owner of that Building 7 who had built it. And when I asked about it, she said, "I believe that is true." She said that to me on the phone, "but I will have to get him to call you to confirm." That's as much as I got that would be firming up what Jim talked with me about, that building had been built to, if somebody needed to, they could control the explosion. I have the messages left, who I am, Linda Moulton Howe, reporter and editor, earthfiles.com, the radio broadcast, Coast to Coast AM, and I am just trying to confirm if that building had originally been built with the ability to have controlled demolition of the building. All of that was straightforward. I had phone numbers. I had, I think, three phone numbers. The woman who was helping me, the owner's number, and I think it was a lawyer or an assistant. I had three different phone numbers. By the end of that day, I had not gotten a call back. The next morning, I called all three of the numbers, Whitley, and all three were disconnected.
My word.
And I thought, it was hard to believe that I, as a reporter, calling and asking, everything I was doing was straightforward. I was not trying to do anything but just straightforward confirmation. And the fact that, and to this day, never got a call, never got an email, and those numbers, I tried the numbers, especially of the woman that I had talked to in that office that was responsible, that office was responsible for the building of Building 7. And it never changed. It said, this phone number has been disconnected. Never, ever got any other answer.
That is so fantastically ominous, Linda.
Well, yes, because it implies I'm being straightforward. She was being seemingly straightforward. That means that she would have gone to the owner of the company that built Building 7 and said the reporter would like to have confirmation about whether this building was built in the beginning with the ability to bring it down in a controlled demolition, that was a dangerous question to answer.
You know, I have a feeling there may have been something else going on here. And if you could not answer that question, but you wanted to, one way to telegraph that would be to just disconnect the number, because it tells the reporter that, yes, there is something to this, and it's extremely sensitive, and we can't talk about it.
Right.
Instead of simply saying no comment.
Well, all of this comes down to another question that I have been mulling over recently more than anything else. Why, Whitley, from World War II all the way back to when we got into, after Pearl Harbor in December 41, why would the knowledge that Prime Minister Churchill, General Eisenhower, President Truman, FDR, George Marshall, Cordell Hull, Secretary of State, all of that group, why would they come to a policy decision that every single thing about extraterrestrial biological entities working the planet, being involved, Hitler saying that why he was doing the position that he had in World War II was because he was working with extraterrestrials that were blonde, blue-eyed, and white-skinned from the Aldebaran or Aldebaran solar system, and that had been at least in some of the German news operations, and that meant another sentence that was said to me in December of 1999 by the Defense Intelligence Agency analyst, who told me that three competing ET groups had been on this planet for at least 270 million years. Here is another takeaway, absolutely pivotal quote from that discussion in December 1999. Linda, World War II was an extraterrestrial war fought through human bodies. If all of the players in leadership during World War II and after, which would include the Manhattan Project, the development of the atomic bomb, maybe Einstein and Oppenheimer and that whole group knew that they were building something because of or in spite of extraterrestrial presences. Whatever the absolute truth of who knew when, it comes down to why did they all draw a line in the sand and they said, no one is to speak about this. NDAs began to be written. I've seen them where it said, if you disclose any of the operations that you are working in, you will lose your pension, you will lose, and it goes on and on about penalties, and that has existed as the environment all the way since World War II on. Why would the leaders in the earth in World War II and after, why would they have drawn such a dangerous line in the sand that essentially said, from here forward, no one anywhere speaks about extraterrestrial biological entities, and if they do, termination will be legal in the black world's laws that they perpetrated?
Well, you know, I'm aware of the fact that there are classified prisons, and I think that if you went into one, that would be termination without death, which would be pretty awful.
But why? Why couldn't the world coming out of World War II, the United States especially being the 800-pound gorilla that helped get England through the war next to Germany, why couldn't they have looked at this whole situation and said, we now have to educate the whole planet together, and we're going to tell them the truth? Because if we continue to and sort of draw a line in the sand and policies of lies, policies of denial, that has been the bizarre upside-down world that the first war office that became the Pentagon has insisted on for the last 75 years.
Well, you know, if this species, if mankind is an experiment, then conflict among us must be a big part of the experiment. There's another thing, though, that strikes me, and that is that if we were reflecting in World War II some kind of larger scale cosmic conflict, which certainly could be possible, I would think, then we should have been told the truth afterwards. And keeping the truth from us, it strikes me as being very much anti-human, because and getting back to the breakaway civilization, if they are blessed with extraordinary technology that the rest of us can't see or use, and we're kept in this blind state, then they don't want us. They don't want us to survive.
We're abused. It's what I have said for several years. We are an abused species by lies.
Yeah, because, you know, lies, it's interesting that the observers, when you look at the documentary, the idea of lies and secrets essentially being bedfellows isn't spoken of that way, but it kind of comes up again and again, because once you are keeping secrets, you are necessarily living in a tissue of lies. You have to be.
Yeah.
And I just can't ever forget the Crabwood Formation from the UK,
right,
dropped down, I believe, in 2000 also. Beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises. There is good out there. We oppose deception.
Yeah.
And we are drowning in deception. Exactly.
Right.
So there seems to be someone else not involved in this conflict who would like to free us. Who are they?
I don't know, but Chaim Eshed, 1 year ago, in December of 2020, released his book that was a memoir about all of the work that he had done for Israel in terms of satellite development. And then at the end of the book, epilogue, it says epilogue, and it has a title, "We Not Alone in This Universe." That is what he titled his epilogue. And Chaim Eshed says in that epilogue that it isn't humans who are controlling the release of the truth that we're not alone in this universe, that it is the non-humans themselves. Now, that's his point of view, but I think it is an interesting facet for us to discuss, because which non-humans would be, receiving some kind of value in keeping humans dumb and blind until a point comes in the future where those particular non-humans decide that then we should be told the truth? Who are they that is keeping the truth from us? That's as important as knowing about who is trying to help us, because it means the people or the intelligences trying to help us are the opposite of the intelligences that are controlling our being kept in lies and deception.
Right. We oppose deception. Maybe they're going to win. Maybe that's what it's about.
But who? Which ones are helping us?
My guess would be it's none of the three that we are familiar with, that it's someone else, someone who has our best interests at heart. And we don't see them because they are staying outside of this conflict. And I have a feeling that they may be on their way to try to help us in some way, because we are living in a labyrinth of mirrors here. I mean, everything you think may be true, you turn in another direction, and it turns out to just be another lie.
Yeah.
And we keep trying to build these structures of what the situation, what our predicament is, and then the rug is pulled out from under us so that we are left helpless. You know, back in the slave days in the Old South, you know what one of the things that was illegal? It was illegal to give a slave a map. And there's a good reason for that. And that's why we don't have a map. But what do they want from us that they would have a motive for keeping us in ignorance, like Charles Fort suggested? It's a barnyard, but what is their motive? What do they get out of us? And that's the scariest part, in my opinion.
I understand exactly what you are saying, and it is a really important point. But I have felt deeply ever since I started in complete ignorance and innocence, A Strange Harvest, investigating animal mutilations, and doing that starting in Colorado and realizing they were around the world, and having law enforcement say, look, we've seen the lights in, and we've seen beams coming down from lights. Ranchers have seen animals rising in beams of light and then be dropped back down to the ground. And as Sheriff Tex Graves told me back in September of 1979, 42 years ago, Linda, the perpetrators of these bloodless, trackless animal mutilations are creatures from outer space. Now, in the beginning, when I was first trying to think about what he was saying, I didn't really feel fear as much as I did curiosity. Why would extraterrestrials from someplace else in the universe be harvesting blood and tissue from Earth animals? That's where my mind went, and 9 months of working to produce A Strange Harvest, a documentary about it, I found my curiosity always outweighed fear. And I have always felt that that is the equation that you could also hold up to the planet, that there is an entire nation of India that they have for centuries had the background of the Vimanas and Krishna as extraterrestrial and blue-skinned. It's been a part of their history for an extremely long time. It would not be a shock to them at all. Other nations that might also have old histories, if you went to the Middle East, they're not going to be shocked by the introduction of other intelligences because it has been a part of their ancient histories. One man working for the government said, "The biggest problem, Linda, and why we don't talk, is because there are groups that would be considered fundamentalist groups, and they would be alarmed." And he also said, this is going back to December 1999, the DIA analyst, he said, "The one huge group on the planet who will have the hardest time with the truth are the scientists."
Well, that's certainly true. There's no question about that. And they're having a horrible time with it right now, in fact. Because you look into the scientific community, and they're buying into all of these silly season explanations for the Tic Tac and the Gimbal videos. It's just, they're trying to go on as if it simply wasn't what it was. They're having trouble seeing it. They're having trouble facing it, because it means that the rug's pulled out from under them. And, you know, I can't blame them. I remember, I've mentioned this on the show before, I think. I had a conversation with Rusty Schweikert back in the 90s, and he's been always an adamant anti-flying saucer, anti-alien person. He's a real classic skeptic, or he was then. And he said, "You know, Whitley, the reason I guess I don't want this to be true is I don't want it to be a well-worn path to Mars." And I understand that, because it pulls the rug out from under them, and it means that all of the things that they're trying so hard to discover, somebody else already knows perfectly well. It's ordinary. And it's as if Columbus was suddenly told, we can go around the world in a few hours, and here's a map that shows everything, and you have no reason even to leave Portugal. I mean, that would have... It takes
it
something very profound from you.
It just seems so stupid to have policies of denial be the blanket that the power brokers put on the planet, the blanket meaning blinding.
Yeah.
While they, the power brokers, and the scientists that are inside with those power brokers, and the Space Force that has been in operation since 1972, working with the Nordics, working with the Tall Whites, out in 22 solar systems, moving out further, perhaps already some in Andromeda. That is a real reality, Whitley. And if that is for this planet of Homo sapiens sapiens to be continually kept in the dark, is beyond abuse. It's absolutely nuts. It's one huge part of intelligent life are already out working together out in more than one Milky Way galaxy.
Exactly.
While the planet that is part of the collaboration with the Tall Whites and the Tall Nordics, we are kept in this bizarre and bizarre dark, and that the punishment, I know punishments that have gone to military people who have barely done anything beyond talking about the fact that, yes, there are extraterrestrial biological entities, and they have their bank accounts emptied.
Yeah, well, that kind of punishment is very familiar to me, believe me. And I know of people who have spoken out, and even a little bit, and ended up like sequestered and unable to communicate with people in the world around them, and imprisoned even when they just, like Art Exon, General Exon had all kinds of trouble after he talked to Randall and Schmidt, and it showed up in their book that, you know, he really did. I mean, that was, he stepped off the reservation, and that was a lot of trouble for him in his life, a lot of trouble.
Well, what I am hoping that happens in 2022 going forward is that some kind of common sense begins to descend upon the Pentagon and the Department of Defense about how crazy this is to keep this huge disconnect going, and that if they would turn around and simply say, we apologize for keeping these policies for the last 75 years of denial, but these are our worries. And now, today, we can announce with excitement, we are collaborating with extraterrestrials that have helped us learn how to do the Alcubierre warp drive. We have spaceships that are already out at other solar systems. And now we would like to have all of the youth of our planet excited about becoming spacefaring. And we are going to turn this all around. We're going to now tell everybody the truth as we move for the first time all together as a human civilization that is moving out into the galaxy and other galaxies. And eventually, this is how we will survive.
Well, that is certainly a hopeful sign. You know, DARPA just on December the 8th announced that they had accidentally, quote unquote, created what they called a warp bubble, which suggests that a warp drive may be possible. And I wondered if it was an accident at all.
No, I do not think that. Listen, they've been doing Alcubierre warp drive for way more than the last, let's just say, from the beginning of this particular 21st century. They've already been doing this for a long time. These are like dropping into science news now, pieces of fact that is tantalizing, and it makes it sound like, oh, the scientists are beginning to learn how to do this. They've been doing this since they started working with the Tall Whites and the Nordics since 1972. And so now we're in some kind of a crossfade in which they're trying to get into news and into universities and into credible venues. Look how close we are to Alcubierre warp drive. Oh my gosh, look, we are getting numbers that would anticipate that it would work. They already know it works. They're already working in spacecraft that are based on the Alcubierre warp drive. This is how they move light years, Whitley. It does not take light years with the Alcubierre. You're pulling your space, your destination in space, you are pulling it to you.
To you, exactly. And so it doesn't take light years at all. It takes a second.
And remember Philip Dick in his brilliant, brilliant science fiction. He had a story about a door where you stepped over the door frame, like the landing of the door. You just stepped over it, and you were in another part of the cosmos. That is exactly the universe we live in. We've just been denied the truth.
It looks to me possible that that isn't going to last, because something is happening in our world. Not only did you made reference to the head of the, I forgot her name, the head of
Avril Haines.
Avril Haines, yeah.
Yeah, well, she's the director of National Intelligence over 17 or 18. You get that number sometimes, right? 17 or 18. Of all of the American intelligence agencies.
Well, Bill Nelson, who's the head of NASA,
yeah,
in a conversation at the University of West Virginia, which is on YouTube, seems to – you've heard this too?
I did a story about it at Earth Files and did it at my Earth Files YouTube channel and ran the video in which he is basically saying – he walks right up to the sentence – that the UAP could most likely be extraterrestrial.
Well, these are huge admissions, and they are profound cultural influences, because they are undercutting the intelligentsia, the scientists and the academics of the world. Because even my friend Jeff Kripal prefers to think of this as something that is kind of not fully physical, that's imaginal, because I guess he feels it's more comfortable that way in somehow.
But it's not.
I don't think it is
either.
We're
dealing with real civilizations that are way, way, way older than us. This is a solar system that's only 4.6 billion years old. And we're in a 13.8 billion year old universe. And that means, just exactly like Michio Kaku a long time ago said, if you just took the 13.8 and you divided it by 4, that you would have approximately 3 billion year old epochs. And
right,
that means that the universe, with light, with intelligence, with evolution of life, would have been in epoch 1, 2, 3, and we're in 4. And that the universe, on a timeline, and evolutionary forces, because I think we're in one universe that's part of possibly an infinite number of universes, and that the true scope of what is behind the creation of universes and timelines is maybe the most incomprehensible part of all of our discussion. But whatever that is, don't take it away from the fact that this is a universe that could have had advanced intelligence in the first epoch, and that would mean by the second and the third, thousands of years in advance of where we would be at 4.6 billion. And that is something that gets lost in arguments. The universe and the amount of intelligence that could already have been moving in the, we'll call it the Alcubierre warp drive method, could have happened in epoch 2, epoch 3. It would be then so common. It would be the way you move in light years.
Yes.
And you don't take light years. And the fact that I have been able to talk with some people in the military who have knowledge about this, that they describe that there are facilities where you walk a hall and you come to an intersection, and when you cross that intersection, you're completely in, and that was Spartan 1 in my Antarctica, Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice. Spartan 1 had experienced this, and it was in a building complex in Gakona, Alaska. You would walk the hall to a intersection, like the door frame that Philip Dick talked about, and then when you cross that intersection, he would end up in one step in Hawaii.
There are longer steps, I think, because I think you can end up in one step, conceivably in another galaxy.
Yes.
You could be anywhere.
Yeah. It has something to do with how the relationship between creating the pulling of the destination, the idea that you are bringing the space destination to you, which is very difficult for humans to grasp because we are Euclidean geometry beings. We, our legs walk, we walk lines, we walk streets, we drive streets, we fly up in the air, but we're still going in time. We're still using up time moving forward. And the idea that we would never have to do that, that we would pull the destinations to us, that's very difficult for the human mind to grasp, but it is absolutely clear that the Alcubierre warp drive, the math works, and that there are already testimonies that we are doing warp drive out in this universe, and it's reducing light years to seconds or minutes.
You know, something just came into my mind that I haven't thought about in years. I was trying to find out how the visitors got here. And I seem to remember it was one of those mental conversations. I wish I could say it was physical, but because I always suspect the mental conversations. I can't help it. I'm not a huge believer in channeling. I think the human imagination can easily go out of control. But now suddenly, hearing this, the peculiar answer seems to make more sense. When I ask the question, how do you get from place to place? Because it was obvious to me that they weren't flying in ships moving at light year speed because it's too slow. The answer was, it's a solid idea. And now I suddenly think to myself, the problem with the Alcubierre warp drive, as we understand it, is the enormous amount of energy that is necessary to bring two points in physical space together, even for an instant, because you have to bend space. And in order to bend the universe, you obviously have to be able to apply more energy than it possesses in itself, which seems impossible. That's why it's always assumed the Alcubierre warp drive doesn't work. But if it has something instead to do with the mind and consciousness, it might be, yes, a warp drive, but no, not what we conceive of as a physical warp drive, because then you get to the idea that is solid, a solid idea. In other words, an idea of movement instantaneously from place to place that somehow has actual form and function in the physical world.
Well, it's my understanding that the energy issue is taken care of in the fact that there are the you're creating these two bubbles, front and back, when the Alcubierre warp drive is executed. And those bubbles are these warps in the space-time fabric. And the fact that there's one in the front and one in the back of the vehicle that you're in, that accomplishes all of the energy and the pull of space that you need. And that's why that headline, that
they call it a warp bubble.
And that what they're finding, or they're finally putting out in these little drops out in the public, is they're saying the math appears to be getting close to. That's what that news was about. We're getting close. Well, that's it. They're just not telling the whole story.
Right.
We're doing it, and it isn't an insurmountable energy thing. It has to do with the balance between the two pockets, one in front and one in back of the craft.
You know, it may be what we're seeing here is something very hopeful, actually, that someone has decided that the human species has got to get off this planet in a big way in order to survive, which would be correct.
Yes.
Now, but let me circle back here for a minute to another possibility. Assuming this structure of Greys, Nordics, and reptilians is correct, and that they are very, very ancient. They have been here and presumably in this universe for all of those 270 million years or longer. I would think that they might be absolutely desperate. My mind goes back to the time that I asked when I was on one of my walks and I was aware that, or I wouldn't say I was aware, but I felt that there was a presence, an entity near me, and I visualized it, and this may be accurate, as an older sort of a gray. And I do know that some of them are organic and they do age. And I asked, what does the universe mean to you? And immediately saw in my mind's eye, like a television image, a picture of a coffin. And what I'm getting at here is that if they are trapped in time, then I circle back yet again even farther to ancient Egypt, to the Pyramid of Unas, which I return to so often, because this is the pyramid text in it, is, I'm convinced, the last text of soul science we have on planet Earth. And it describes how to ascend. Mm-hmm. And you ascend by being light. It's lightness, being in the light. And that means that you have to do and be good and work on behalf of the good. It's also what Jesus was saying, that you have to be light in order to ascend. And he did it himself in the tomb to show us it was possible.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm getting at, just let me finish. Maybe these beings can't ascend and they're trapped in time, in which case this conflict that they're having is the only thing that would be keeping them sane.
And that there really is a divine field.
Exactly.
As I sense it. And the divine field, if I could share with you and the audience now, this quote that I keep taped to the front of my computer at all times. It came from a conversation with somebody who was investigating aspects of physics and light and infinity and the speed of light, and we were having a discussion. And in the discussion, this quote came up, and I wrote it down and typed it up, and it says, quote, "We experience photons in space and time. However, there is no space-time for a photon. It experiences the entire universe as a single point. It experiences all of time as a single moment, a single photon."
That's ascension.
And that is the real universe, the real cosmos, put it that way, that we are in. I feel it to my core. And the soul is a reality. It is a quantum energy packet.
Absolutely, it is
and
a reality.
It was created to basically live, evolve, cycle, recycle in photons. That the light is the fabric. Intelligence can move in that fabric. And if we truly understood the relationship between infinite photon and the soul, we would be so much closer to the real truth.
And we would be so much closer to ascension, because that's what it's always all been about. It's not about staying in this universe and getting trapped in it by living a tissue of lies, deceit, secrecy, and frankly, evil. It's not about that.
It's not about enforcing an order on the people at all. It is about making them free. The truth shall make you free. But it's not used that way. The truth is hidden, so we cannot be free. And that is evil. And those who do it, whether they are reptilians or grays or people or whatever they are, because they do it, they're trapped in the stream of time. They can't ascend. There's no way. They can't join the light. But that's the only thing that matters to a real, fully human being. And I say human being because some of the visitors have said to me that we don't think in terms of species. We think in terms of races. And there is only one humanity that contains many different races. And this humanity is what I feel I want to be part of, and I am part of.
Me too.
But as soon as you start to lie, we oppose deception.
Right.
As soon as you do that, you get heavier and heavier and heavier.
And you wrote the beautiful book about what happened to Christ.
Yes.
And 2,000 years ago. And Whitley, I am always carrying in my mind, it was studying. I studied the Bible like I would read a book, not for a belief system or because of a church building, but because I really wanted to read the words that were in, especially the New Testament, about the hero, the extraordinary Christ. And one has always stuck with me. He who believeth in him who sent me shall have everlasting life. And ever since I read that sentence, what automatically and immediately went into my mind was the opposite. He who does not believe will not have eternal life. Now, it is almost as if that is the line that is down in the cosmos of everything there is. You have a soul. The soul has recycling to learn. And it was almost as if that line in the Bible, not talking about this in terms of religious buildings or anything, but a truth about the cosmos, that the soul recycling in eternal life is the entire essence of the universe we're in, and perhaps the whole cosmos. But if you separate yourself from that divine field, then your soul may be in jeopardy of not being able to recycle, which is exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Of beings, yes. And that if we understood the physics, if we understood the whole truth, instead of being confined to these slices having to do with power brokers controlling everything, if we understood our soul, it is the quantum energy linked to the divine field, the infinite photon, and that what Christ said, he who believeth in him who sent me shall have everlasting life.
That means rising out of the time stream.
There is an eternal recycling that is evolutionary, and the souls are what learn and give back, and that is the infinity.
You know, I think that we can rise out of the time stream, and I think that perhaps one of the reasons that, you know, when I've been with some of the visitors, they have been filled with is it jealousy? Yes. And yet others have been so fully supportive of my own journey in spirit and trying to help me.
Right.
And interestingly enough, the ones who abducted me in 1985 have been the ones who have been with me always, just as recently as this morning, early in the very early hours. And now I know why. It was about this conversation, because I had a feeling that something extraordinary was going to happen when the two of us got together, and it seems it has.
So, yes, I would agree.
And go ahead.
While we were talking, or while I was just listening to you, I just got this in on my cell phone, which is just happens to be on my computer desk. Question from a friend. And I don't even know the source. I'm just reading you this information that came in my text. I don't even know what the source phone number is. Question from a friend. Why can't I create by thought my own environment? That's what Christ did when he sat with the people and said, ye of little faith, and created the wine, the bread, and it was wine and bread and fish. Morphogenic fields. He was able to move atoms and molecules into morphogenic fields of fish, wine, and bread. That was what that story was about, which is, why can't I create my own environment? You haven't learned to control your own mind and body, is a reply. It's like I'm reading a Q&A here. You are living on a prison planet encapsulated by electromagnetic fields that degrade your natural abilities. You have been taught all of your life to believe in a very limited set of abilities. You came into this life by way of an implant station. That is one thing that has come up occasionally, and I don't know if you have ever encountered that in all of your relationship with the Greys. Do the Greys implant, they implanted you, they've implanted many, many abductees. Is it for a positive reason or a negative reason?
Well, that's the question. You know, oddly enough, something came in on my cell phone at the same moment. A friend sent an article from The Hill, the journal, The Hill, which is specializes in Congress, set to make history on UFOs, Congress revives the 1% doctrine. The 1% doctrine is a doctrine which means that if something has an even 1% chance of being dangerous to us, then the government is obligated to take it as a certainty. Here's what the article, the first
Good
part
of God, you're kidding.
No, it's not. I'm not kidding. Here's the article, the first part of it. Congress is days away from enacting historic legislation on UFOs. And we're recording this on December the 10th. So this may happen shortly. It may be probably already will have happened by the time you are listening to this, folks, in the first week of January. As first detailed by researcher Douglas Dean Johnson, a must-pass defense bill will force the U.S. government to mount a sweeping effort to investigate unidentified aerial phenomena. Perhaps most importantly, following 7 decades of Cold War-induced secrecy, denial, and obfuscation, the 2022 National Defense Authorization Act will mandate unprecedented government transparency on UFOs. Robust bipartisan support for the bill's expansive provisions amounts to a stark rebuke of years of official ineptitude and inaction on UFOs.
Yeah.
Moreover, congressional assertiveness is revising the 1% doctrine, which holds that there is even a slight chance that a particular threat is real. The government must act as if it is a certainty.
Well, now, this is Gillibrand's amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, and I was happy to see that. But if they are doing the 1%, it means that what I've been told is our government is so concerned that we have hostiles. And this goes to the remote viewers who have said there are friendlies, neutrals, and hostiles, and they were saying that all the way back from the 70s onward. Jim Mars also. And if what they're worried about is telling the civilization of Homo sapiens sapiens on the earth the truth that we're not alone, that there are allies, there are neutrals, and there are hostiles, and that the hostiles may want to annihilate all life on earth, and that that is the reason why they would never tell us the truth, to keep us from growing up and facing a universe that is not unlike our own planet Earth, where there are friendlies, neutrals, and hostiles. Earth knows all about that. We don't need to be sheltered. We need to be told the truth so we can get stronger,
right?
So that we can face what is out there, that we can work side by side with the tall whites and the tall Nordics, who seem to be able to take on and at least hold back the hostiles. And if all humans understood the whole big picture, and that we're in a universe and where the yin and the yang symbol is an absolutely accurate metaphor, and that perhaps Thomas Campbell is correct, that this particular universe was made to be an entropy reduction trainer for souls, so that hostile and friendly and neutral would just be part of the kind of the way that the profile of intelligence was allowed in this universe, in order to test and teach and train and strengthen souls.
Exactly.
If we knew all of that, then why would we need any government having a 1%, which basically says they're getting ready to keep us from further truths about what they know about hostiles? And that, to me, would be debilitating if they go that direction.
Of course it would. And I think that they may go in that direction. And I also worry a lot about the close encounter witnesses, because a lot of us are very deeply connected with this. Does that mean that they're going to identify us as friendly to hostiles? And does it mean that we'll be considered agents of a foreign power or something, those of us who are out in public doing this? I don't know what it may mean. It's very creepy. However, there is good out there. And the Crabwood Formation is such an essential, to understand all of this, it's essential because it tells two things. It tells that there is something wrong here, that there is conflict here, and also that there is another level, that there is good out there, and therefore that we can reach it.
Right.
I think that these dark entities are trapped in the stream of time by their own actions. And I think that they are jealous, and I think that they seek to trap human beings in the same way. I think that that's their purpose, and ultimately, that, I mean, you come down right down to it, and you see a definition of them in the Bible. They're called demons.
Whitley, something cared enough to send avatars to this planet to interact with humans, not just in India and not just in Israel. Avatars have come through at various periods in Earth's evolution. How could that ever have happened unless something out there that is like the infinite photon, quote, that it cares what happens to the souls in Homo sapiens sapiens? And that, to me, is the bottom line and why we've got to move to truth.
Yes.
The whole planet has to move to truth.
Truth. And we have to somehow or another wean our governments from its addiction to lies. And it sounds like, for all of its flaws, this congressional initiative might be trying to do just that. Linda, we were supposed to talk for 15 to 30 minutes, and obviously this is an entire show, and we'll run it in the first week of January. I would like to end it in a funny way, because strangely enough, when things started coming in on your cell phone, the same thing happened here.
Yeah.
And something else has come in, and this is a comment that was literally posted
on unknowncountry.com moments ago by one of our many wonderful participants. That has to be one of the most beautiful social media groups on the planet. They are so smart and so good. They're good people. And we drive trolls away, I have to tell you very frankly. If you go in there and try to troll your history very quickly, I don't fool around and I'm not playing games. Here's what this person just wrote, and it's as if they were listening somehow to this show, to us talking, and being that they're on my website, that may very well be true. Here's what he wrote. I would like to add that humans have a very limited band of awareness, only a speck of the spectrum of light, sound, etc. Then our brains process that into a worldview or paradigm of materiality, a natural simulation. A dog or cat lives in a completely different simulation, a sense of reality. This has been referred to as an illusion. This does not imply a bunch of servers or AI games. The natural universe is living and extremely profound at weaving the game without some limited advanced beings who are also in their own incarnations. Galactic AI would need living beings in nature to not become static. Regardless of the level of technology, we are on the cutting edge of evolution, of time itself. Meditation, lucid dreaming, and other situations can open this bubble we have created and let us peer into the mystery which is looking back at us. Synchronicities know us extremely personally. There is so much more to experience than the limitations we are conditioned with. And folks, I think that just about says it all.
Yep.
And let's seek toward the light and away from the conditioning, the secrets, the lies that have bound us so long to this slavery in which we now live. It's time to move ahead and look toward real ascension for every single individual in this species who is willing to step into the light.
And we are not alone in this universe, and that has to be the big, big paradigm shift in this century if humans are going to survive.
Linda Moulton Howe, thank you so much for being with us and being with me. We have had a remarkable journey together over the years, and I'm so glad we are still on it. Let's head for that light, folks, all of us.
Yes, yes, yes.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.